listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, your host. As this show is posted, it was this month, July, 75 years ago, that C.S. Lewis wrote the preface to his book, The Screwtape Letters. If you know the history of the material, then you also know the content originally came out weekly before it was published as a book the following year in 1942. In fact, not long ago, I did a program featuring reflections from a variety of individuals about the letters because of this anniversary. I hope you had a chance to hear it. If not, or if you would like to listen to it again, you can follow the link in the show notes. As previously mentioned, The Screwtape Letters is my favorite work from Lewis, and so because it's the anniversary of when Lewis wrote the first preface, I thought I'd invite others to share thoughts about the landmark work for today's show. As before, my guests, whom I will mention their name just before they speak and give more details about them at the end of the show, approach their reflections from a variety of ways, and that's okay. First up, reflections from Dr. Michael Ward.
When I teach the Screwtape Letters to my students, I'm sometimes surprised at how they find it not very funny, whereas I think of it as uproariously funny, a great work of satire, which not only makes me chuckle on almost every page, but occasionally makes me laugh out loud. And I've noticed that some of my students think that because the subject of the Screwtape Letters is temptation, and the main characters are two demons, two devils, and the prospective destination of the patient is hell, that all these things are themselves of such seriousness that no possible smiling, let alone laughing, can accompany the telling of the tale, the writing of the letters. But of course, the whole point of the Screwtape Letters is to mock the devil. And indeed, that's what Lewis specifies in the two epigraphs to the book. And the very choice of the two epigraphs is itself amusing, because they come from, on the one hand, Martin Luther, and on the other hand, Sir Thomas More. And why is that amusing? Well, because they were on the opposite sides of the Reformation. They couldn't agree about God and the Church, but they could agree about the devil and how he can't bear to be mocked. Mock the devil and he will flee from you. And that's precisely what Lewis is up to. He's mocking Satan and his wiles, and doing so very effectively, if you ask me. The whole idea of hell as a government department, as this vast, sprawling bureaucracy, is itself very amusing. You know, this is very different from the typical biblical picture of hell as a lake of burning sulfur. This is just a place of endless corridors and filing cabinets and dossiers and undersecretaries and memoranda. It's something out of Kafka. It's something out of Dickens's Circumlocution Office. It's not a place of wailing and gnashing of teeth, except in that way which we are all far too familiar with when we run up against the red tape of bureaucracy. And the red tape itself, I think that might be, you know, something that is echoing somewhat in the very choice of name that Lewis gives to the chief character, Screw Tape. We're being screwed over by red tape. His names are themselves very amusing, not just Screw Tape, but Trip Tweeze and Slub Cob and Wormwood, of course, though Wormwood is not Lewis's invention. That is one of the biblical terms, you know, the Wormwood and the Ghoul that we find in the Book of Revelation. Screwtape's personality is very funny too, the way he cannot understand what love means. He cannot understand why anyone should find him funny, even though he is utterly ridiculous in his pomposity and pride and preening self-importance. So I think the main thing that I would want to say about the Screwtape Letters is allow yourself to be tickled by it. Allow yourself to laugh, not only at the devil, but at your own worst self, at your own evasions and hypocrisies, which Lewis, with unnerving accuracy, dissects throughout the book. It's, in a way, it's a very uncomfortable book in how he locates and identifies so many of our temptations. But that's the brilliance of the book, that even as he's giving you a lot of moral advice and spiritual medicine, he makes it go down sweetly because it's all sugared. The pill is sugared. A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. And it's the laughter, it's the comedy that helps us receive all this moral advice, which if it was said to us straightforwardly, we would find terribly boring and platitudinous and stale. So the Screwtape Letters, laugh at it. That's my take on the book.
Dr. Jim Buchholz.
So when I first started, reading C.S. Lewis' Screwtape Letters, I kind of saw it from the other side. We often talk about, in church, this is what we need to do as Christians. And it's kind of looking at the other side and looking at the motives and the game plans of the other side. So when Screwtape's trying to convince, his nephew to convert the patient in their direction, this is how they're thinking, how the demons are thinking, stuff like that. So it's not happy fluffy. It's kind of from the other side, the dark side kind of thing. And looking at the motives there is what I like. I asked my wife to read the book after I read these, these letters that comprise this book. And I asked my wife to start reading. She got through about half of them and then quit reading and says, I don't want to read them anymore because it's not everyone's cup of tea. And I actually forced her to read it, I guess I should say. I said, no, I want to talk to you about this afterwards. I want you to think about the other side. And it's just like, if I think about how the other side thinks, it helps me think how I should present things. So it may seem a little dark and twisted to try to get into the mind of the other side, but that was kind of one of the things that kind of made me think this was different and drew me to it. I kind of like TV shows and movies that are the same way, where you get to see the whole plot or the whole movie or the whole process from the dark side, the bad guy's point of view, not always people trying to stop the bad guy. So even though this wasn't my wife's cup of tea, this book, she did finish reading it, and we had several conversations afterwards that were good. So I encourage people, anyone listening to this podcast, to, go ahead and read it, have someone else read it and discuss it later. And even if the other individual doesn't like it, you can have good discussions about, what you did and what you didn't like about this type of a book, which is a bunch of letters from the viewpoint of a demon.
Sarah Waters.
I've got the illustrated version of Screwtape, which is illustrated by Pappas. And I think, to me, the very fact that you can buy an illustrated version of it is indicative of the whimsicality of the work. Now, it's no pop-up Narnia, which I have got to, but it does show how Screwtape bridges many of Lewis's writings. I believe he can detect hints of his children's writing to come, the serious playfulness, which we also see in his sci-fi stories. I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but bear with me. I suppose what I mean is the way he threads together concerns of eugenics with the fantastical fiction, much in the same way that Lewis's more recent biographers like McGrath have suggested he does in Narnia, i.e. hitting vivisection on the head with talking animals. But what's interesting with Screwtape is it doesn't stop there. Amongst the conviviality and only thinly veiled serious undertones, with the theology which underpins it, we also see Lewis the academic, as the emphasis on reason, philosophy, and arguments supported by evidence intermingle, and we encounter the supernatural amidst the mundane. When I say the academic Lewis, I'm thinking in particular of the relationship between the senior uncle and his junior nephew Devil. Read it again, and you'll see that there are uncanny resemblances of the teacher-student relationship, and we witness the not-so-positive flip side of the power of knowledge. This is, of course, aside from the academic or rather literary references that we see throughout. And I think, to me, the most striking parallel is another work by Lewis which was published that same year, 1942, and that, of course, is his preface to Paradise Lost, where we also see him discussing the devil in perhaps a more academic way. And the bit that that particularly I thought was connected is this bit when he's talking about how articulating the devil's voice is far easier than articulating the voice of God. He says, and I quote, "To make a character worse than oneself, it is only necessary to release imaginatively from control some of the bad passions which, in real life, are always straining at the leash. The Satan, the Iago, the Becky Sharp within each of us is always there and only too ready the moment the leash is slipped to come out and have it in our books. That's holiday we try to deny them in our lives. But if you try to draw a character better than yourself, all you can do is to take the best moments you have had and to imagine them prolonged and more consistently embodied in action." So that ventriloquization of the devil voice, which Lewis found so troubling when he was writing Screwtape, I think he also tackles in his academic work, and that interrelationship between the two texts is exciting. And I think amongst the brutal humour and the cutting wit of Screwtape, there's some really powerful messages below, which perhaps because of the fantastical elements are that much more accessible than perhaps a more academic or allegorical approach might be for other readers.
Dr. Rob Fennell.
The Screwtape Letters are full of such delicious irony and reversals. In letter number 12, Screwtape writes to his nephew that the Christians describe the enemy, and of course he means God when he says the enemy, the Christians describe God as the one without whom nothing is strong, capital N, nothing. And nothing is very strong, strong enough to steal away a man's best years, not in sweet sins, but in a dreary flickering of the mind over it knows not what and knows not why, in the gratification of curiosities so feeble that the man is only half aware of them, in the drumming of fingers and kicking of heels and whistling tunes that he does not like, or in the dim, long labyrinth of reveries that have not even lust or ambition to give them a relish, but which, once chance association has started them, the creature is too weak and fuddled to shake off. Lewis is talking about nihilism, that great sense of apathy, that great sense that nothing really matters, that nothing really counts. And it's just a little oblique reference, I think, to what he develops in Voyage of the Dawn Treader, when the company on board the ship sail into the realm of the Dark Island to rescue the Lord Roop. And on the Dark Island, everything seems to be erased, their imagination, their hope, the sense of light. Of course, it's Aslan in the end that pulls them out of that darkness. But back in the Screwtape Letters in letter number 12, Screwtape says, "You will say that these are very small sins. Doubtless, like all young tempters, you're anxious to be able to report spectacular wickedness. But do remember, the only thing that matters is the extent to which you separate the man from the enemy. It does not matter how small the sins are, provided that their cumulative effect is to edge the man away from the light and out into the nothing. Murder is no better than cards, if cards will do the trick. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts." It's as if Lewis is saying, we hardly even notice our own decline, our own sliding into the ways of wickedness, our own sliding towards the path to hell by these small, measureless steps. I like the connection to the Dawn Treader because that sense of nothingness and apathy and despair is very pervasive still in our culture, long after Lewis wrote this book. But I think we need to cling to that great moment in the Dawn Treader when Aslan does send a light to lead the people out of darkness.
Peter S. Williams.
Something that's always stuck with me from Screwtape, and I haven't tracked down the specific quote, but there's a part where in the voice of Screwtape, Lewis talks about how God, as the father of these human beings, and this really annoys Screwtape, God as the father of these human beings seems to be satisfied with them however often they muck up, and they're like little children who keep falling down, but the father is happy with them as long as, having fallen down, they stand up and continue waddling towards him, like a father sort of interacting and looking after a toddler who keeps falling over, but just wants them to keep making progress towards him, and that's the main thing. And of course, he puts this in the voice of Screwtape, who's highly annoyed by the way in which God is being indulgent of these human beings. But that's something that always stuck with me as a sort of typical Lewis image of living the Christian life in grace. A number of years ago, I wrote a book called The Case for Angels, in which I took a philosophical look at the nature of angels and demons and at the arguments one might make for believing in the existence of such things. And right at the beginning of that book, I quoted from C.S. Lewis's introduction to the Screwtape Letters, where he says, "I believe in angels, and I believe that some of these, by their abuse of their free will, have become enemies of God, and as a corollary to us, these we may call devils. They do not differ in nature from good angels, but their nature is depraved." And Lewis says, "This belief seems to me to explain a good many facts." And he mentions that it agrees with the plain sense of Scripture, the tradition of Christendom, and the beliefs of most men at most times, and conflicts with nothing that any of the sciences had shown to be true. And I really expand upon those notions in the book and look at the arguments that can be made for the existence of angels and demons from Scripture, as well as arguments that are independent of Scripture. He talks about tradition and the beliefs of most men at most times, the sort of argument from common consent, which can be broken down into the arguments from the common consent of humanity in general, and from philosophers in particular that I look at. But also there are independent arguments and arguments from particular experiences of angels and demons, some of which are recorded in the Bible, but many of which people give testimony to outside of the biblical tradition that can be looked at as well. But certainly this comment at the end about it doesn't conflict with anything that the sciences show to be true. As with looking at the topic of miracles, for example, what these supernatural events or beings conflict with is not science, but a philosophy that some people marry with science and confuse with science, namely metaphysical naturalism. But metaphysical naturalism is not the same thing as science. It's possible to do science, and indeed the originators of the scientific method and the scientific revolution were people who believed in God and pursued science. As Lewis himself summarized it, men believed in laws of nature that could be found because they believed in a lawgiver, a maker of nature who gave it its laws, but who could also interact with that nature for his own reasons, should he choose to. And if you already believe that there's a God, that God has created people in his image, one of the independent arguments for angels and demons is to say there would be a sort of a strange and rather obvious gap in the sort of ladder of being if there were no finite but unembodied persons. If you have an infinite unembodied person, God, and God creates a world of everything from atoms all the way up to finite embodied persons, well, there's an obvious sort of space there for finite unembodied persons that one might infer that it's plausible to think there's something that would fill that gap. So it's your background beliefs that affect the reasonability of believing in angels and demons. It's your philosophy that comes into play here in assessing the particular arguments, not anything to do with science per se, as Lewis says.
Dr. Donald Williams.
You know, I've been thinking about the history of works of fiction that try to give us some insight into the nature and process of temptation, and where the Screwtape Letters fits into that. I think we have to start maybe with Dante and the Divine Comedy, as Dante's temptation is pictured as the external beast that keep him from climbing the hill to heaven. And the impossibility of dealing with that without having to go through the entire trip to hell and purgatory, where he learns all kinds of things about sin and temptation. Then you skip ahead, you've got John Milton with Paradise Lost, where that tiny little precis, the temptation of Eve that we get in Genesis, is expanded. And Milton does some really interesting things too. He shows Eve, for example, looking into the pond and seeing her reflection and not realizing that it's a reflection of herself that she's looking at. She fell in love with it. Then with Adam, she's almost disappointed because he's less beautiful than she was. She doesn't sin because she doesn't choose herself over Adam, but you kind of can imagine how she possibly might be able to do that someday. Moving toward the modern period, you get something like Nathaniel Hawthorne's Young Goodman Brown, where Brown goes in forest, which represents temptation, and he meets the stranger who represents Satan. And there are some really interesting insights into the way temptation works there, as Brown keeps saying, you know, I don't know if I want to do this. And the Satan figure never argues with him. He just, fine, you can always turn back anytime. Let's just talk about it. And he sort of keeps stringing him along. And before Brown realizes it, he's all into the forest and becomes part of the witch, completely loses his faith. Or Mark Twain. And who corrupted Hadleyburg, really fascinating story, where you have this town that thinks it is immune to temptation. They have their city motto, lead us not into temptation. But of course, because they protect themselves from every possibility of temptation, they really have no strength in dealing with it. And so a stranger comes through, decides that they're way too smug, and gives them a test at which they all just complete part because they got no experience dealing with temptation. When you get to the 20th century, the obvious member of this group is Lewis and the Screwtape Letters. The great advantage that Screwtape has, I think, is the way he lets you see the psychology of temptation really from both sides. You see it, of course, the book is all from the perspective of the devils, the demons, as they discuss their strategy, and you get to see the things that they're doing with patient. But you get to see it from the human side too, because you recognize all those situations that you've been in and all of those rationalizations that have been suggested to you. And the other 20th century piece that really stands out to me would be Perelandra, very similar to Paradise Lost, in which you have that long conversation between the unman and the green lady, Ransom trying to intervene, and you see just the green lady being worn. We could spend a lot of time talking about all this, but the thing that I find interesting is that in the top, say, half a dozen or so that come just unbidden to my mind as examples of insightful views of temptation presented in fictional form, C.S. Lewis has two. And one of those, of course, is the Screwtape Letters. I think my favorite part of Screwtape is the way Lewis gives us an insight into the strategies that will best work against temptation. And one of those is the positive. It's not just a matter of just say no. The patient needs to focus on good things, like simple good things, like a cup of tea or a walk in the woods. Instead of just saying no to evil, we have to say yes to good. And in doing so, I'd say it fully earns its place in the Hall of Fame of fictional works that give us insight into what temptation is like.
And there you have it, a variety of reflections on the Screwtape Letters. I hope these comments will make you want to read or reread the book. I'm William O'Flaherty, and in case you didn't know, I've written a book for an individual or small group to get the most out of the Screwtape Letters. More about that at the end of the show. The show notes have a link to where you can order that book, plus links to the guest that I'll give you more details about in a moment if they have a website. You can find these show notes either at EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. The Podbean location is where the podcast is most easily found, Again, that's allaboutjack.podbean.com. The other location, essentialcslewis.com, provides a link back to where the audio files are located, among other resources. Now for more details about From Those You Heard Today. Dr. Michael Ward is a fellow of Blackfriars Hall, University of Oxford, and professor of apologetics at Houston Baptist University. He's the author of Planet Narnia and the Narnia Code. He also recently co-edited C.S. Lewis at Poets' Corner. His website is michaelward.net. Dr. Jim Buchholz is professor of mathematics and physics at California Baptist University. He is the director, producer, and screenwriter of Between Heaven and Hell. The website for it is betweenheavenandhellthefilm.com. Sarah Waters is a PhD candidate at Oxford Brookes University, specializing in Shakespearean drama. Her master's thesis was on the influence of Shakespeare on C.S. Lewis, particularly focusing on his Chronicles of Narnia. Her research on the literary influences on Lewis is ongoing. Dr. Rob Fennell is Associate Professor of Historical and Systematic Theology at Atlantic School of Theology in Halifax, Nova Scotia. He is the editor of Both Sides of the Wardrobe. His website is robfennell.wordpress.com. Peter S. Williams is Associate Professor in Communication and Worldviews in a university in Norway. His books include C.S. Lewis versus the New Atheist and A Faithful Guide to Philosophy. His website is petersWilliams.com. Finally, you heard from Dr. Donald Williams. He is professor of English at Toccoa Falls College in Georgia. He has written several books, including Mere Humanity, G.K. Chesterton, C.S. Lewis, and J.R.R. Tolkien on the Human Condition. His website is donaldtwilliams.com. Thanks again for listening to this special edition of All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. As noted, I've written a book to help one enjoy the Screwtape Letters even more. My approach is more comprehensive than any previous material released. I cover the follow-up essay, provide suggested answers to study questions, and among other things have a unique topical glossary to give you an at-a-glance summary of the various topic Screwtape covers. That book, C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters, is available online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can learn more about it by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of the book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com.